Welcome to Correctors. This week, a problem solver versus a problem identifier, part two. The questions discuss answers are, what is a problem solver? What is a problem identifier? And why would I want to be a problem solver rather than a problem identifier? Someone was telling me the other day that being a first-time manager is really hard. You can't ask your former peers, who are potentially now your directs, what to do. You can't ask your boss what to do because they just promoted you and apparently they think you can do it. Your friends aren't that helpful because they're probably in the same boat that you are. And so it's really easy to feel completely alone and have no resources, no one to talk to, no one to ask. One of the benefits of our video products, so the Effective Manager Conference, the Effective Communicator Conference, and the Effective Hiring Manager Conference, is that you get to ask us questions. So you can buy the product, see all the training, and if you've still got a question or you've got something odd happening in your team that seems unusual, or you've just got some really specific question, you can email us and we'll answer. So you'll no longer be alone. You'll have a resource. To find our video products, go to managertools.com and select products from the menu and find the video products in the dropdown. So last week, we talked about identifying problems and identifying the value and the level of effort. And we used the 2x2 matrix to decide what to do with those things. So just as a recap.
Anytime we get a 2x2 matrix, I get excited to record that cast. Yeah, I'm so excited.
You and I both. So the four options on a 2x2 matrix are low value and high level of effort, in which case we just leave it. If it's low value and low level of effort, we postpone it. If it's high value and low level of effort, we do it now. And if it's high value and high level of effort, then we make a plan. So now we're going to talk about the solutions and then presenting a plan if you need to and how to execute.
Yeah. So we want to create as many solutions as we can, rather than fixating on a single solution, which happens sometimes, or the solution that comes to us most quickly, or clearly that's the answer, right? We want to focus on volume. We want to focus on creating as many solutions as possible, because the more solutions you have, the more likely you are to find one that is easier or more effective than maybe your first instinct.
The example I always think back to when whenever we talk about this is in the Effective Manager Conference, when we talk about coaching and we say, come up with some ideas about resources for coaching this issue, a direct with this issue. And if that's all you tell the group, they'll come up with like 10, maybe. But if you tell them, the group I had last week got 50, all of a sudden, they can find 40, 47, 53, because they know that that many are out there and they just keep thinking. And some of those ideas are wacky and you'd never use them, but that's okay, because the bigger the pile, the more likely the right answer is in that pile. And and it always amazes me that just that little piece of information, which is not, but could be entirely fake, makes people come up with a whole bunch more ideas that they didn't know were in there.
Absolutely. And I think of it as you're going to get all the ideas, all the potential solutions, you're going to get all of those out and you want as many as possible. And I think of the next step, because then you're going to talk about them. Then you're going to do some analysis. You're going to figure out, right? To me, it's kind of like writing, right? You do a lot of writing for our company. I think it's so much easier to start with words on the page. The more you have on there, it's easier to edit or supplement or add or say, oh, you know, there's something missing here. I'm going to add that, or I don't need this. I can take that out. Then starting with a blank piece of paper.
So I do an outline, which has the things that we use in our outline, but it has a bunch of bullet points underneath of like an explanation of what that means to me and the points I want to cover. If I have an outline, I can write in a single podcast, I can write in 45 minutes to an hour, because all of the thinking and stuff has been done beforehand. All I'm doing is putting words on the page. If I don't have an outline, takes me four times as long every time. Yeah. It's amazing. That blank page syndrome is really bad. And so, yeah, a whole list of ideas, even if you don't think they're great ideas, is better than a blank page and no ideas.
Absolutely. And you can include other people in this. I mean, that's why we do in the conference, we do brainstorming as a group. It's not an individual activity, because asking people for, you know, their thoughts, their solutions, it's amazing how often, you know, someone coming at the problem from a different angle or with a fresh set of eyes, they can find a solution that is incredibly simple that you completely skipped over. You didn't even think of it, right? Sometimes the very act of explaining a problem allows us to see a much simpler path than we would have, you know, kind of wrapped our brain around the axle just thinking of it in our head.
I was on a new website and I was trying to do something in the admin panel and I couldn't work out how to do it. And I read the instructions, still couldn't work out how to do it. And so I was calling the help desk and I was going through press one, press two, you know, mm-hmm. all of that stuff, and then waiting to be answered. And literally the moment someone answered, I saw the answer. And I was like,
of course.
Hey, you're a genius. Bye.
Yeah, but, of course.
But, you know, just phoning the help desk seems to work 50% of the time.
I feel like that happens to me when I call you. I go, gosh, I've tried to figure this out. I'm just going to call Wendy. And then I go, oh, never mind, Wendy. I found it. I figured it out. It's because Wendy is like my help desk. The other thing that somebody may be saying, now I doubt anybody listening to this is actually saying this, but if you're thinking to yourself, well, but I don't like people. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to people. I'm not looking to have conversations about, yeah, I don't have any friends. Well, you have access to millions of people, billions of people, just use Google. Google can be your friend, right? There's tons of potential solutions for, I'm sure, whatever problem or issue that you're looking at is out there.
Yeah, you just need a bit of patience with Google, I think. There's a lot of people say, I tried Googling and I can't find the answer. Yeah, that's because you post the first two links and it's not in the first two links. If you're trying to solve a problem, even if it's one that a lot of people have, often the answer isn't in the first couple of links, even though Google would like you to think it is.
Yeah, unless your problem you're trying to solve is how do I increase Google's ad revenue?
Exactly.
Or how do I,
yeah. How do I help Google?
Yeah.
That's not hard. Okay, so now we've got a whole list of solutions. The next one is choose a solution. And there's a few things that go into choosing a solution. Obviously, it's got to be a solution that works. So you can cross out all the ones that aren't going to work. But the next one is having a level of effort that's proportionate to the value of the problem. You could have some really complex, interesting ways to solve a problem that's of low value. You rarely use it, or it doesn't have much value in terms of it's not costing the company much, or the additional revenue is not going to be very much. And, you know, you find this amazingly over-engineered solution, which a lot of us like, but that's a waste of resources. The solution and the value of the problem should be proportionate.
Can I tell you something that I think some of us are guilty of when,
yes,
when that solution comes up, when we have that really overly technical or you know, much more robust solution than really this problem calls for. Well, I'm guilty of, I'm not going to talk about anyone else. I'm not going to put words in anybody else's mouth. But what I'm guilty of is finding other problems so that I can increase the value of the solution, right? Yeah. Well, but this would
like
also solve
five different small
thing.
Volumes.
Yeah.
Five different low-value solution problems add up to this amazing solution.
Yeah, yeah. And then I have to catch myself going, wait a minute, what am I doing here, right?
Yeah. I had a rule in the end of 2021 for like 4 months, which was no new software. Whatever the problem is, mm-hmm. you have to solve it with the software you have, because otherwise I'm like, oh, I could have this and I could have that. And now I can put all the stuff that I used to have over there in here. And all I end up doing is moving things from program to program.
Yep.
And it's possible at this point, the level of effort has increased because others have helped you to see that the problem is more difficult to solve than you think. When you try and work through solutions, you're going to find out more about the problem because mm-hmm. you're going to have to ask different questions. it's possible that the values increase because you've realized that the problem is happening more frequently than you thought, or it's affecting more people. So before you decide on the solution, you want to run through that level of effort value matrix again and just check that you're still in the same quadrant that you were before you thought of solutions, because the whole thinking of solutions part of this process can give you more information about the level of effort and value, which may change things later on.
Yeah. There are other factors to consider in your solution. There's time taken to fix, right? So even with a relatively low level of effort, the time that it will take to create a solution could be quite long. You know, for example, if there's 1,000 entries in a database and each one needs to have an update done by hand, that's not particularly difficult to make the change, resave it. But the length of time it will take to cover those 1,000 entries is a lot. It's long.
Yeah. And some that may mean that you actually want an automated solution, which is a higher level of effort, but that's dictated by the length of time that it would take to fix. This message goes out to all the procrastinators out there. If you've been thinking all year, I really must sign up for one of those virtual effective manager conferences, I've got you better act quick news for you. The October Effective Manager Conference virtual sold out. There's one that starts November 1st. It's almost sold out. And then the last chance is November 28th. So if you were definitely going to get your management training in this year and you want to do it virtual, make sure and go and sign up now. Next is the number of people involved. So the more people involved, the more complex the solution becomes, even if it doesn't change. It's explaining to one person why the page doesn't look like it used to or has different information or why they have to act differently in X, Y, Z case is relatively easy. Explaining to 10 people in your team is a little harder, but doable as long as your boss has a team meeting that you can have 5 minutes in and explain it to everybody. But explain that to 10 different people on 10 different teams or 20 people, it becomes exponentially harder just because of the communication problems. Just because if you have 20 people, that's 20 different ways of thinking about the problem potentially, or 20 different ways that they approach a web page and look for information on it. So just tailoring the communication to those 20 people is going to take you more time.
Yeah, I would say a general rule of thumb is that the more people you're communicating to, the simpler the communication needs to be so that everyone can understand it. And sometimes complex solutions are not easy to make simple or to communicate simply. And that raises the level of effort for sure.
And if it's not someone you're sitting across from and explaining it one-on-one, or you can see their face and there's, you know, 10 people on a Zoom call and they can ask questions, the likelihood of them hearing what you're saying via email when it's, you know, oh, by the way, everybody, this page on our website has changed. Instead of looking bottom left, you need to look top right. If you send that out in an email to 50 people, 49 of them will not read it. Or even if they read it, they will have forgotten it. So again, like how you're communicating and who those people are relative to you, that makes a difference in that whole communication piece.
Absolutely. The next one is financial cost. This is sometimes, not always, but sometimes included in level of effort. Perhaps the solution means, you know, buying an extra person a license to some software or adding, you know, some overtime into the budget. Financial cost is often opaque to teams who don't manage their own budget. So you'll need to be careful about incurring costs that potentially you're not even really aware of or thinking of.
And you forget that, you know, if there's 10 people who have a piece of software and the limit is 1 to 10, usually the cost for 11 to 20 is significantly higher. So you think, oh, I'm just adding one person at $100 a year, big deal. But sometimes just that one person can tip the edge and all of a sudden it's not 100, it's 200 or 500 or whatever. So right. You have to be careful with that. Next one, durability. So how long will the solution last? If you have a flat tire, no, what do you call it? A flat.
Flat tire, yeah.
If you have, I would call it a puncture. That was.
Ooh.
So if you have a flat tire, there are a number of solutions. And which one you choose depends on how far away from home you are and how far you have to drive. You know, a fixer flat where you put that liquid in the into the tire,
yeah, it's
right?
Like a slimy, it's a can, you spray it in there and it coats the inside.
Apparently will take you 100 miles according to the advertising I read, which seemed like a really long way to trust it. But a donut spare tire, you know, one of those special ones that's just a spare tire, only gets you 50 miles. If you have a proper tire in your car and you can do the change, then that will take you forever, you know, as far as you need to drive. How much you're prepared to pay for the solution, how long you'll wait, all of that influences the choice you make when you decide, what am I going to do about this flat tire? And it's the same with things at work. You know, there's, if I fix this today, if I just botch it and I'm going to just fix it for today and that will last a month. And in a month, I know my project's over and I'm going to have a lull and I'll be able to fix it properly. That might be a solution. On another problem, another project, you might think, no, I have to do it right first time because it happens so often or it has this value or it affects these people or whatever. You know, all of those things go into how good do I make this solution?
Right. Absolutely. And our last point is, how close to the customer is it? The closer it is to the customer, the more value a problem has. Right? Fixing a typo in a customer brochure that's sent to 100,000 customers has more value than a typo on an internal website that's only seen by internal staff. Fixing a problem with, like, for instance, a point of sale, right? Mm-hmm. A register or point of sale equipment that definitely has more value than an internal system that only a few people use, right? When I was in HR earlier in my career, we would look at this when we looked at benefits administration. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I was kind of ancillarily associated with the benefits team. And we would talk about what benefits are people using? What benefits should we pour resources into? What should we, you know, look at the user experience on? And there were some benefits that people weren't using very often ever. But then there are obviously like health benefits mm-hmm. and, you know, eye and vision and dental and that type of stuff. And that was where we focused all of our efforts on making sure that experience was as seamless as possible.
So once we've considered and chosen a solution, the next thing is to recommend a solution. So if the value or the level of effort equation suggests that it's necessary, you want to make a recommendation to someone else, usually your boss, about which solution you're going to choose. You know, if it's a low value problem and it's a low level of effort and it, you know, it's only your problem or it's only you and somebody else in your team, it's going to take you 5 minutes to fix it. Just fix it. You don't need to make a recommendation mm-hmm. in that case. If it's more than that, if it's going to take you 2 hours to fix it, say, out of a 30-hour week, that's significant enough to want to flag it to your boss. Hey, I've found this problem. I've done this analysis. I've chosen this solution. It's going to take me 2 hours. I'm going to do it on Tuesday. Nothing else is happening that day. I think it will be fine. And you can do it in that kind of tone and that kind of at that kind of speed in your one-on-one. It doesn't need to be a PowerPoint presentation and a formal kind of thing if it's 2 hours out of a week. Mm-hmm. The bigger the problem, the bigger the level of effort, the bigger the conversation has to be so that the person who makes the decision can make the comparison between all of the other priorities so that they can make an accurate and a good decision. So here's an example of an O3 kind of conversation with your boss. So boss, I noticed that the spreadsheet we use for calculating shipping cost routinely pulls the wrong number from the database. It only takes a couple of minutes to fix each time, but we use that spreadsheet a lot, so it has a lot of impact. I think I can make a permanent fix in 30 minutes. Is it okay if I go ahead and do that? You know, I can let you know if the parameters change, if I discover something different. And sometimes your boss will think that problem doesn't need to be solved.
Well, here's the other thing, Wendy. The alternative, right? And that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The alternative is we just identify the problem. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, think about what we just, you know, what you just laid out for everyone versus just identifying the problem. Coming to your boss and going, well, I noticed that the spreadsheet we use for calculate shipping costs routinely pulls the wrong number from the database.
Right. And now your boss has got to do the analysis.
And now, now your boss.
Choose the solution and then tell you to do the solution. You've just given them a whole bunch more work.
You're basically pushing off those other three steps on your boss to ask the questions and do all that. And that's the value of this cast is when you do that, when you do it the way Wendy just said it, your boss is going to go, oh, yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how many more times you'll get a yes if you do this than if you just say, oh, I'm going to do this. Like, there's a problem. Yeah. I'm going to do this. That proof almost that you have stepped through all the steps is what makes your boss feel secure in allowing you or saying, yes, I'm going to take your recommendation. Yes, just do it or whatever.
And build you credibility.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, I have thought of this. And yes, a lot of the time your boss will say, good, I'm glad you've done the thinking. Yes, good, just go do that, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes your boss doesn't think that problem should be solved or they don't like your solution. And that's because they have a different view of the problems, the level of effort, the value than you do. Like, I always think of that quote, standing on the shoulders of giants, which is not quite what bosses do. You know, they're standing on the shoulders of their team and the boss over there. It's like one of those cheerleader pyramids. But there is a different view if you're standing, you know, on that first level versus on the ground. And that different view can give you a different idea about problems. And sometimes you're right and sometimes they're right. Sometimes it's really annoying when you're right and you have the right solution and they disagree. But don't fall in love with that problem or your solution and then fight them on it. Like, most times discretion is the better part of valor. Either it'll come around again or it'll never get solved and it won't matter. It's way worse in the long term to be at odds with your boss than it is to be irritated every time you see that problem reoccur.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You got to see the forest through the trees there.
Exactly. And if your boss chooses a different solution, you murdered the unchosen alternative, which I think the cast for that should be called murdered the unchosen alternative, but it's actually called professional subordination. So if you don't know what that means, go listen to the professional subordination cast. But basically it means that if there's a choice of A and B, and your choice is A and your boss chooses B, after the moment they choose, you don't get to talk about it. You get to talk and influence and make recommendations until the point of decision. And then at the point of decision, they've decided and you wholeheartedly support B. And if somebody asks, hey, I thought you were going for A, you said, no, my boss persuaded me, we're going for B. And you just do B. And it's the art of being a good direct is to be able to give up on your stuff and just do. If I say do what you're told, people think that we're advocating for some kind of like military style.
Or just organization. Person.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not. What we're saying is choose your battles and make recommendations. Try and influence at the right point because you'll have way more success doing that than fighting your boss after they've made a decision.
And small note, I'm so glad that you gave everyone the name of the cast because if you just went to our website and typed in murdered the unchosen alternative, the professional subordination cast is the cast, but we reference it in a lot of different casts.
Yes, of course. And so you would get a list of 50,
you would get a lot of responses to have to go through. So, yeah.
So the last part of this is execute the solution.
The execution phase of problem solving is just like the execution phase of any project. You decide on a plan, you set the tasks, you set the deadlines, you work through them, you alter the plan when it's required. It's the final stage that turns you into a problem solver, not just a problem identifier.
Everyone can identify a problem. Everybody can identify problems. Mm-hmm. Human beings are really good at it. But to really be adding value to your team and your organization, you need to be able not only to identify, but to solve problems. And that means a logical approach based on the size of the problem, the value, and how much work it will take to fix it, the level of effort. And the more times you go through this loop, the better that you will get at estimating both. And if you spend your time solving only high-value problems, you'll have better results and accomplishments. You'll have better, you know, end of the year reviews, better things on your resume, and in our experience, a more satisfying career.
Yeah. Can I just add one more point, Wendy?
Of course.
I just thought of it. Sometimes, if you go through this process and you tell your boss exactly what we said to tell your boss, and just like we just talked about, your boss says, nope, mm-hmm. nope, I want a different solution, or we're not going to solve that problem. You could take that mm-hmm. as defeating,
yes.
right? But you get something from that. You get the practice of going through this process, mm-hmm. right? You get to do this a few times. And even if it doesn't bear fruit this particular time, the exercise of going through this thought process, right? This analysis and this process is, you're not going to be great at it the first time you do it.
Right.
So do it. Do it multiple times. And the more you do it, even if your boss isn't on board, you get the benefit.
Yes, exactly. And if you've practiced and you get good at it, the time that it's really important, that's when you'll get a yes.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.